you're interested in leadership and you want to lead as your most authentic self, this is the podcast for you. This is a show that breaks down the concept that leadership is complicated. Well, I'm going to let you in on a secret. It's not. I believe that it's an exchange of energy between two people. I want to create conversations for emerging and experienced leaders to come together and discover a new way to lead from the inside out. You already have everything that you need to be an exceptional leader. What we will uncover is the power of human connection and understanding how we are hardwired to seek out a true sense of belonging. So come join me. Let's create a community of leaders that are ready to challenge the status quo and who value human connections more than bottom lines. As we begin this episode of the Lead From Within podcast and all the episodes that will follow, I want to take a moment to acknowledge the land on which I live, work, play, and lead. I am deeply grateful to be on the unceded traditional territory of the Coast Salish people, including the Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, and Musqueam nations. Leadership to me is an exchange of energy, a dynamic where humility and curiosity create the foundation for growth. Remarkable leaders show up ready to listen, learn, and evolve. And in the same spirit, I start each episode with a land acknowledgement because it reminds us of the importance of honoring the past and the truths and wisdom of Indigenous peoples whose stewardship of this land teaches us invaluable lessons about connection, resilience, and responsibility. By doing this, we set an intentional and create the space to lead differently into the future with integrity, inclusivity, and a commitment to meaningful change. So welcome back, everybody. Today, I'm very honored to welcome our guest, Juvenal Lavrosse. And before we get started, I'd like to properly introduce him to you all. Juvenal is a dynamic and results-driven professional known for his expertise in leadership, organizational management, and strategic planning. With career dedicated to driving excellence, he has developed a reputation for his innovative problem-solving abilities, strong interpersonal skills, and a commitment to fostering growth and development in both individuals and organizations. And as a passionate advocate for education and workforce development, he has worked extensively in programs that empower individuals to achieve their full potential. His leadership is marked by a focus on collaboration, operational efficiency, and building teams that deliver exceptional results. Juvenal's approach to challenges is rooted in his beliefs that continuous learning and adaptability make him a trusted leader in navigating complex projects and achieving long-term success. Welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. And that was such a beautiful introduction there. So thank you so much. Well, made me feel a lot more important than what I am.
Well, listen, I always joke. I've said this many times on these podcasts. I think that we all need to carry our bio around in our pocket every once in a while. On the days when we're maybe feeling a little less accomplished, we can pull it out and remind ourselves. Now, I owe you an apology because I normally do this before we hit record. Did I say your name correctly?
Yes, you did. You did it better than most because most people will go Juvenal, like the rapper or like delinquent, and then they think they made the funniest joke ever. And it's like, God, I've heard that before.
Maybe it's that Canadian French that is coming out that helped a little bit. So that's awesome. 100%. Well, I'm super excited that we can sit down and chat today. I know that we're going to talk kind of generally speaking about leadership and your experience with leadership in the multitude of areas that you've worked and the people that you've supported. So if you don't mind, why don't you tell us a little bit more about yourself and what has kind of led you to where you are right now?
Oh, gosh, man, to think about the beginning of my journey. And when we speak about leadership, it really started for me in sixth grade. Now, we're not going to go through the whole bio like that, but really, that's the first time that I had a real taste of leadership as I was the president of the sixth grade class. And it is so interesting. Didn't quite know what leadership was at that time or what my leadership style or what even a leadership style was. But what I found throughout the years is that I have a base in servant leadership. And it's been like that since sixth grade. I just didn't know what it was called until I learned about it a few years ago. And I was like, oh, that's me. Okay, I understand now. And that has led me through different careers and pathways, starting off in banking, then moving into the film industry. And then now I work for a government contract, providing training for At Promise Youth, age 16 to 24. And I'm doing it at the highest level. We're performing very well in the top 10 in performance. I think a lot of it has to do with leadership and with us being on this topic. I actually have a question for you. For you, leadership, is it something that's natural that you just have it, or is it something that can be developed?
Yeah, I love that. Thank you for asking that question. I believe that we all have it. And here's why. The way that I look at leadership is, first of all, I think we've made it way more complicated than it needs to be. Relationships can be messy, but I think how we lead doesn't have to be. And I think that when we don't look as leadership as a position and we look at it more as the way that we walk through life, then leadership becomes easier because it's based in core values. It's based in those values that are the non-negotiables, those North Stars that guide what you do and why you do it. And so when you lead from that place in a way that, it's funny that you said that because I think already great minds think alike. I was going to ask you, do you think that your core values, even at six, help to drive that sense of servant leadership? Because I think that when you know what your values are, you know what those non-negotiables are. It helps making really difficult decisions that much easier. So, do I think the softer skills, I hate that word, but just for sake of time, do those softer skills need to be learned? Yeah, I think a lot of people don't have emotional intelligence and they're not able to recognize that their words matter. The words that they use actually can impact people in a way that doesn't feel good often without intention. So, do you need to have an awareness created? I don't think that comes as naturally for some people as it does for others, but I do think it can be learned.
Yes. So to answer your question, yes, I believe that my values definitely is a basis or a base point for the way that I lead. And I think that's the beauty of your show and the title of your show, Lead From Within. I do believe that your leadership style or what you present as a leader is really just the outcome of your core values and how it is that you treat people. You touched upon something there, and I just read the book within this year by John C. Maxwell, and it's the five levels of leadership. And that first level of leadership that he speaks of is leading by position. And I started reflecting as I was reading this chapter, and I was like, oh my goodness, I have met so many people that have led by position. It's the people that say, because I am such and such a position, therefore I have the right, so therefore I do this. I've had directors come in and say, well, my boss gave me carte blanche to just do what I have to do, so therefore I'm doing it without any kind of collaboration. And really, that doesn't foster a safe work environment by doing so. My favorite one, and I learned this one at an early age, is the because I said so. And I worked at a treatment facility for sexual offenders at one point, and I was new to that kind of place. And a client asked, like, why do I have to do this? And I said, because I said so. And I will never say that ever again. Oh my gosh. Like, I almost ended up in a restraint. I was like, oh my goodness, I will never, ever, ever say that again. And that's carried with me. It's definitely a core moment that has just stuck with me. Like, when people ask, it's okay to answer. And it's okay to say that I don't know the answer, but we can try to figure it out, as opposed to just, hey, I'm the boss, so therefore I say so.
I love that so much. We say that so often that you don't have to be vulnerable as a leader, but when you sure show up that way, people recognize it. And it's one of the fastest ways from a neuroscience perspective, because I'm a nurse, I kind of nerd out in that it's one of the fastest ways to build trust and connection with another person is when you show up with vulnerability and you don't try to BS them and pretend like you have all the answers when they know you don't. And you just let them know, I have no clue, but let's figure out how to do this together. One of the things that you said, I love the comment because I said so. And when you said that, I was actually hearing my mother's voice in the back of my head when you said that, because I grew up in the 70s as an only child to a single mom who was very strict because, we grew up really poor and in a neighborhood that wasn't great. So I was like on the straight and narrow. She's like, no, and no means no. And I just grew up that like there was no discussion. When she said, you know, because I said so, that was the end of the conversation. And I wouldn't say that I have been like traumatized in any way from that, but certainly it did feel like there was no opportunity to even have my voice heard, right? Like someone else that had more power than me was making a decision and I had no way to influence the outcome in any other way. And so I think it's just really important that even as children, when we're told that, sometimes it's for our own good because we, you know, we think we know about everything in the world when, and we don't. But I think that as adults, when we hear that, it often feels very much like it's a power kick. And so I think it's really great that you brought that up. The other thing that you mentioned.
Well,
is,
with that, if I could
yeah,
add on
absolutely,
to that piece,
you can.
I believe that leaders do not either understand or respect the power of their voice. So you may say something nonchalantly, but the people that are following you are holding on to that as if it's law. So being understanding of the power of your voice and how you project your voice and what it is that you're actually saying, it's a crucial key that I know that I myself, when the first time I became a director, I didn't quite understand it because I'm very relational and I was just like, we'll just say, hey, whatever. Like, yeah, I don't care if you have this event going on, like, and then it's like, well, he said that we can have this event going on and it was a directive and therefore we're doing it. I was like, whoa, no, that really wasn't where I was going with it. It was just like, hey, I'm okay with it. Let's like talk as a team and present it.
Yeah.
I didn't present it as a directive. So people who are in leadership truly have to understand and respect the power of their voice and what it means to the people that are following them.
Yeah. I would imagine, and I'm making an assumption, so please correct me if I'm wrong, that working with youth, it sounds like you've been working with youth in different capacities for a long time, that when you're working with youth, your leadership approach obviously may be different in terms of how you engage, but also to make it like relatable. But I think also that there's this recognition that they're always watching. It doesn't matter if they're 8, 9, 10, or they're 17, 18, 19, they're looking up to people that make them feel safe, that make them feel valued, that make them feel seen in the world. And those are the people that they start looking a little closer at and emulating. Do you find that as well, that you really have to be even more present and more aware when you're working with youth?
Yes, absolutely. And I had someone in the corporate office say to me that you are a center director 24 hours, 7 days a week. You could be on a flight, but you are representing the brand. And I didn't quite understand that at first. I was kind of like, nah, because there are different sides to me. And I hope we can kind of touch on that piece later on in regards to leading and being able to lead from a positive place. But I didn't quite understand the gravity of it until it really is like Tupac, all eyes on me. Like everybody is looking at you and what are you going to do and how are you going to react? So if there's something going on in the auditorium and somebody does something, everybody turns at you like, and what's your reaction to this? And you have to kind of keep, I don't want to say a straight face because I think you spoke about it before. Vulnerability is good. I think it's okay for people to know whether or not you're displeased, but it is the processing of that afterwards that is most important. So for me, I'm a big believer of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And I believe that you have to touch upon those things in every aspect or facet with the people that you interact with. So the employees that you might have that are under you, do they have heat in their office? Is it too hot during the summertime? All of those things are important. They're not going to hear your message if they're freezing. Do they feel safe? Like, is, you know, and of course, the world and environment they're in, yeah, at any point there could be an active shooter. It seems like that's the reality that we live in, but safety is not just the physical safety. Is it safe for me to voice my opinion without being ridiculed in this department meeting? You know, and then you have that piece, and this to me, I think, is the hardest piece to get in the workforce, especially working with youth, is love and belonging. How do I feel that I belong? I'm belonging to something that's important and impactful. And then once you're able to get that with a team, that self-esteem will rise and then you'll get to self-actualization. I'm a full believer that that is the formula to be able to get it done with the team that you're leading.
Yeah, that really resonates with me. A few years ago, I shared before I was doing some training on stress and burnout for healthcare providers, and I was telling them about, self-care and to take time for self, and it's not selfish and all these things. And when I realized that, when I thought about it from Maslow's hierarchy of needs perspective, I thought I'm setting these people up for failure because the basic foundation of that, like their core air, shelter, water, food, that was being met. But those other pieces that get them to the top of that pyramid, which is you've talked about self-actualization, were often not being met. So things like belonging, trust, feeling safe and secure. And when you are fighting up against someone who is a people pleaser and who is a perfectionist and who doesn't or isn't able or has not learned how to set healthy boundaries for themselves, asking them to take time for themselves is like you're it like it's not it's never going to happen. So I do think that there's been a bit of a rework with Maslow's hierarchy in the last few years, I know, but I think that fundamentally, when you look at it, just kind of in terms of a building block, I do agree with you. I think that it is the place that we need to go back to and make sure that all of those pieces are met, because without one, you can't stack the next. So I appreciate that you've kind of given us this framework by which you sort of lead. And we're going to get into all those other pieces as well, but do you see in the experiences that you've had, do you see a particular challenge, like a leadership challenge that continues to come up over and over again? And how you've sort of overcome it? Has there been a thread that you've been able to pull in all the different areas that you've engaged or worked in?
Oh my goodness. So the challenges that I have had that seems to be a common thread, and actually came up in a text conversation with a former employee. And it's I've rised up the ranks pretty quickly. And when you do that, although it shouldn't be, there are, I guess, situations or people that may get envious and they look at you one of two ways. Either you're a threat to them, or you could be a tool for them to be able to move up and elevate. And I have found that to be a common theme with me. For me, the outcome has always been I just want the team to win. But of course, when it comes to leadership and people trying to protect their own, they may be afraid to elevate the riser for fear of they may lose their job. And that's a component or a piece that I've had to wrestle with, which actually brought me to a little bit of struggles. I was working at a facility in Baltimore, Maryland, and I didn't want to see or be perceived as a threat to the director that was there. So therefore, I actually lowered myself. I lessened my abilities to not come off as this threat. And I do wonder if I did more harm than I did good in that. And honestly, in trying to bend the knee, it just became a toxic work environment. This is my first time ever working in something like that. Or I guess at me first time really acknowledging that, oh wow, I'm actually in a toxic work environment. Because you have buzzwords that are out there, right? And it's like, oh yeah, everybody says, oh, this is toxic, this is toxic. And it's like, is it really toxic or is it not? And it took me a while and I was like, oh my goodness, I'm actually in one. I can't believe this. How did I get here? And how do I move forward? So for me, and I'll say this to all the listeners out there, going back to that core, your core values, and what makes you tick and what makes you feel good is so important. So when you mentioned self-care, I had no idea about a self-care. I was a machine. I was like, hey, I'll work the 60 hours a week. I don't care. I'm gonna get the job done. I'm gonna be the best. I'm gonna be the best. But it's impossible for you to be the best if you are not as close to whole as possible. And of course, my awakening happened during COVID, where everybody had a chance to kind of pause a little bit and to really think through, like, what is happening with me? Have I prioritized my life incorrectly? And I saw that, and actually, I said, "What makes me tick? Because right now you're just miserable." And I remember that I have a creative side. That there's another side of me that the professionals don't really get to see, because you got to keep it professional. And that is that, you know what? I used to do stand-up comedy, and I have done stand-up comedy in Miami, in Montreal, in Boston. I've done it all these places, but you stopped because you got into this role. I used to be creative. I used to be into making jewelry with beads, and you stopped because you got into this corporate world. So I really went and found balance with that. I ended up doing what everybody else did, is I started a podcast, and it allowed me to get back to the creative side of me, and at the same time being able to socialize and meet great people from all over the world. And it has provided me balance in the busy day-to-day grind of the work world.
Yeah, that's so powerful because I think that we can lose ourselves, particularly when we're in a toxic workplace. We just are, it's just fighting for survival. I mean, you're just trying to get through the day and not feel like you've kind of had your soul sucked out of your body. And I mean, and I'm a nurse, so I've worked in a lot, and that's why I started my business as well, is because of toxic workplaces. And I think that, one of the questions that I was going to ask you is you talk about moving kind of up the ranks quite quickly. And I was going to ask you, like, why? But I think that what I'm hearing, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, is that we talk a lot about psychological safety on this podcast. And in part, and because in Canada, it's a CSA standard that's required by all workplaces to incorporate these 13 factors of psychological safety into the work. And it's things like doing things that, show appreciation and improve employee engagement and build trust and all of these types of things. But it sounds to me like the way that you carry yourself, the way that you talk, the fact that you have diverse, things that make you get lit up, not just at the workplace, that you are truly just naturally creating psychologically safe workplaces, which ultimately most people will define as where you can show up to work as your whole self and share your opinions in a respectful way that might differ from the status quo and have no fear or worry that there's going to be any sort of retribution or that there's going to be a retaliation. And that's not just from your manager, but also from coworkers and colleagues, right? So it sounds like to me like that's what you're doing and what you've been doing your whole career.
5,000%. And what's the funny thing about it, in this track that I've had the pleasure of working all across the country, from Rhode Island to New York to Alabama to California to Virginia to Wisconsin to Maryland, and now Connecticut. And usually and typically what happens is it's the former employees, they don't really miss me until I'm gone.
Yeah.
And then they're kind of like, wow, like when you were here, it was so different than what it is right now, which has led me to my new purpose now when it comes to leadership. And I discovered that this is my new purpose this year. I think I had the underlying of it, but I really, once again, kind of going through that John Maxwell book, it is providing me a pointed focus, which is I want to develop leaders that can sustain that same environment, so that it's not a situation that once I leave a place, then it goes on the decline. Is that, hey, I have developed enough people that if I leave this place, it'll continue to be able to thrive and even maybe even get better than when I was there. So that is like my new role and focus when it comes to leadership, is assessing people who have it, and even if it's a small little bit of it, providing them with the training and the tools. It is so, you got to invest in people.
Yeah.
In order to truly make a change, you have to invest in people and take the time. And I know that if you're on the management level, director level, you have all these deliverables that are due and you got to get this done, but you have to make time for people and invest in them as well.
Yeah. I think that that's been a bit of a misnomer in many sectors of business, is that if you are a people first culture, you create a people first culture, that your business is going to suffer for it and you won't be hitting these targets and bottom lines. But again, what the research actually shows us is that if you put your people as a priority, your bottom lines actually do much better, because when people show up feeling like their work has meaning beyond themselves and they've got a work buddy and they've got a sense of community, they will overwork for you. They will actually go up and beyond what the scope of their work is, because they don't want to be anywhere else, and they get value out of the work that they do. So it's really this, like, I think, odd perception that a lot of sectors still have, is that, you know, this just means we're all going to get soft and the wheels and the bus are going to come off and you can't cry at work. And gosh, if that happens, like, what are we going to do? So I'm just curious, like, I completely agree with you that we need to start putting money into helping people become better leaders who don't know how to do this. We haven't all been taught how to do this. And quite frankly, 27 years ago, when I started this journey, which is why I do this, I had no clue what I was doing, and I was leading a dysfunctional team, and it was really trial and error. And, you know, the internet was there, but not really a tool where you could go and learn anything. So I'm just curious, what do you do as a leader when you see people that you're helping to support or lead, or someone that maybe you see a spark and they're shut down or they don't feel that they have value and worth? What do you try to do to help kind of spark that sense of leadership and autonomy in them?
So for me, I'm very big on one-on-one meetings, ensuring that I have one-on-one meetings with the people that directly report to me. Those meetings allow me to get a temperature check on a weekly basis on how the staff are that are directly reporting to me. Typically throughout those meetings, you'll get to hear that, hey, this might be going on personally in my life, or hey, this is what's going on with me professionally. Now, with the personal piece, I do try to put boundaries on that, and I do try to speak more in general, as far as I'll send you positive energy, or if there's a resource that I know of or see, or our EAP, I'll do that. But when it comes to the professional side, I do try to troubleshoot whatever the issue is. And by troubleshooting, providing different perspective, because most of the time the issue isn't really with the actual work, it's with another employee, right? And because really a big part of leadership is managing all of the different personalities. That's really what you're doing. You're not doing anything special. It's not because you have more knowledge than anybody. It's because you're able to get person A to be able to work with person B, even though they don't like each other. And navigating through that piece and through that lens. And because they have been identified as someone that has skill or potential, we probably already had the conversation of what director level position do you see yourself going into? So I can help you on that pathway towards that. And then I'm able to extrapolate experiences of my own being at maybe various levels, because yes, I did move up the ladder, but I was able to touch upon so many different positions in doing so. So I try not to go too much into the, well, when I was this position, you know, I did this, that, and the third. But there is value in your experience and being able to twist the conversation so that they can be thought towards being solution-based or solution-oriented. And then putting the onus on that person to, okay, well, so how about you try doing this? And I can't wait to hear about the results next week. So it's now a continued conversation. It has somehow become indirectly a deliverable that you have to do, because you have until next week. So it's not festering. It's not going to be something that's going to take on for weeks and months, and then it turns into this boil point. And you get to have the conversation again next week. And if they didn't try to solve the issue, you get to then process, well, why? What was behind that? Did you not feel confident? Where is it that you're lacking the confidence in being able to have this conversation? Do you need me to come in and mediate this? Now you get to come in as a leader to support that particular situation there. So that is, I would call, I guess, my process. It's not written down anywhere, but it's really on just kind of sensing what is actually happening in the specific situation.
Yeah, I see a book in your future. Just saying. Just saying. Yeah, no, I that really resonates with me a lot. I know several years ago, I found myself in a leadership role where there was an opportunity for a lot of judgment based on decisions that I was making as the leader by people. And so I couldn't quite figure out how to change that narrative. And I think, for me, I did something similar to you where I would tell people, I want you to come to meetings where we have open discussions about issues that we're having. And even if I can't solve them, I want to know what the problem is. And I don't want you just bringing the problem. I want you to bring one potential solution to that problem. Even if it's like you think it's dumb and we'll never get there, I don't want to just hear the problems. I want to start hearing how you're thinking about how do we get to where we can be. And that might spark something. And so they learn, like, don't come with a complaint if you don't have something to back up how we can maybe move forward in a positive way. It didn't have to be anything big and grand. It just had to be something. And I think that that starts to change the narrative and the mindset for some people in terms of looking at decisions that others make and maybe the impact that it has on them from a place of judgment to a place of, oh, well, I can see now maybe why she made that decision. Because when I really think about the issue, that's something maybe I would have also thought would have been a good solution to the problem. So it gets people thinking beyond sort of just the problem, and now it's your job to fix it. It's more of this shared responsibility of how do we get from A to B together, as opposed to you bringing me the problem, and then we're only successful if I fix it. Am I kind of, is that what I'm hearing from you?
And I think it goes back to the servant leadership in me, or naturally, and not really having to get the win. I don't have to be the one to solve the problem, but if I can shepherd the people to be able to solve their own problems, now you're making impact as a leader. Whereas the other alternative would, they're now reliant of you to solve all their problems. And as a leader, I'm telling you, if you're in a leadership position, you don't have time to solve everybody's problems. It's impossible. There's just not enough hours in the day, the week, or the month, or the year, even the leap year. There's just not enough time. So you have to be able to start, once again, investing in people to be able to be self-sufficient, being able to use their voice to be able to provide different perspectives. This is why diversity is so important in the workforce. You want that conflict. That is good conflict with someone coming with different perspectives. It allows you as a leader to process the different angles, because we all are set with our own ways of thinking of things. But if Michelle Thompson has a different way of thinking things that I never thought of, I need to pause and at least think on, could this possibly work? Or
Yeah.
could this work with a tweak? Or could this work with in conjunction to what Juvenal has going on over here? And that's the role of the leader, is once again bringing those pieces together to get the outcome that you're looking for.
Yeah. I think that's genius because a good leader always wants people smarter than them in the room and people who come from different, like who have had different life experiences. I don't want to be around people who have had the same life experience as me because that just means that there's going to be blind spots that are going to be missed. There's going to be things that you don't see, you don't consider, you don't think about. So I think that's really genius, especially I think now. And we're kind of in this place where there's this whole cancel culture. God forbid you say something wrong, there's no opportunity to be able to say, like, okay, I messed up. And how do I make this better? How do we start this over? How do we right a wrong? And I've shared this before. When I worked for a health authority that served First Nations here in Canada, I remember an elder came to me one day and he's like, I can see you're struggling. What's happening? And I said, I'm the antithesis, blue hair, blonde, white girl who shows up, and I'm the antithesis of all things that are, colonialism. And I'm afraid to ask questions sometimes. I'm afraid that I'm going to show up as being disrespectful. And he says, okay, listen, there's two things that you need to learn. First of all, you don't tokenize people. Go do your homework and figure out what you can figure out and then ask questions. And he said, those questions, as long as they're always coming from a place of humility and curiosity, you can never ask the wrong question. And I think that what I'm kind of hearing in your response as well is really just this sense of sometimes we have to have hard conversations. But when we can do that from a place of, hey, I'm here to help, not I'm here to judge or to tell you what you did wrong or that you're a screw up or whatever it is, I think that you can have hard conversations that foster growth and innovation and bringing out the best in people. And I know it's that's a bit of a stretch, you know, but I'm just like, I think that all of those pieces fall into that, that when you create that space for people to feel that way, then you can have those bigger conversations.
100%. And you nailed it with the piece of, and going back to Maslow again, having a safe environment to be able to have that difficult conversation. If I don't feel safe and we're about to have this difficult conversation, I now go into fight or flight, right? Like, I'm either going to try to avoid this conversation, or I'm going to shut down in this conversation, or I'm going to try to be very defensive. Mm-hmm. And we're not getting out the outcome. It now becomes personal. It's a personal attack as opposed to professional problem solving.
Yeah.
So yes, you're all the way correct with that. And I mean, you mentioned the piece about cancel culture. And this is the one thing that I just don't subscribe to it. Sometimes you don't know what you just don't know. And sometimes, or at least with the expectation of cancel culture, is that you're supposed to know everything that is right in the world. And I just feel like that's just such an unrealistic expectation. So going back to my, because I said so, I didn't know that that was the wrong thing to say, because yeah, I came from a upbringing of whatever my parents said or whatever the authority figure said. It's what they said. It's because they said it. And that was that. But it took me to have that experience. Now, if cancel culture was around back then, and, you know, not that this was a huge thing for me to get canceled over, but imagine if I get canceled off of that and I don't get another job in human service. And then I don't get to grow the way that I did because of something that I didn't know, that life is about learning. You're learning 24/7 if you keep your mind open to it. And
go ahead. Well, I was just going to say, I think that you have a great deal of self-awareness and you can catch yourself in those moments and learn from that. And that's a huge part, I think, of evolving as a leader, right? Like when you and I have both shared that we come kind of from that parenting style as, you know, you, when I say no, no means no. And I think that also kind of in a leadership lens tells me that, you know, leaders lead the way that they were led. And so it doesn't matter where that comes from, whether it's from a personal experience in terms of how you were parented or that you have worked in a certain sector that's been very many like top-down autocratic, you do as I say, you'll get rewarded only if you do the things that I see are valuable. That's how you're going to lead, because if there's no one else showing you any other way, you don't know any different. And I think that's the place that I try to say to leaders, give yourself the grace to know that you're doing the best you can with what you have. If you've never been shown any other way, you're not going to lead any different.
Very much so, which I think the workforce has gotten so interesting. For me, I'm on the borderline. Depending on what book you read, I'm either a Gen X or a millennial. I don't know. It all depends on what book you read. I've always identified as Gen X, but Gen X in the workforce and the mindset of, I'm just going to work as hard as I can. Eventually, I'm going to move up and I'm going to keep working and I'm going to work as hard as I can and I'm going to move up again versus the millennial mindset. Now, the millennials, they weren't really with all of that. They wanted more of a voice and an opinion and like, no, I will get it done when I get it done. And after a while, I was like, I feel you guys. I feel you millennials. Yes, I'm my inner millennial is coming out. I understand that. So there definitely has to be a balance with everything, of course, but I think the way that we were led before, which is you go to school, you go to college, you get a degree, and you work really hard, you're going to move up and eventually you'll make more money. That whole, I guess, roadmap to success has been disrupted. And I mean, now Gen Z is in the game. Now, I don't really quite understand everything with them yet. I'm still learning. But you have major disruptors. And You have people that are very successful out there that didn't go to school at all, maybe just finished with a high school diploma. Content creation is so huge. They have their own brands, they have their own followings. So there's different ways and different methodologies of getting it done and making sure that you keep open to that in the workforce so you can remain relevant and innovative and creative. That will excite people to want to come to work every day.
Yeah, so good. All right, I know our time is quickly coming to an end. This time goes by so quickly. I'm wondering if someone is feeling stuck in their career, what advice might you give them?
If you're feeling like you're in a rut in your career, go back to your passions and what it is that you are passionate about. And do your passions still lie in the work that you do? If it does not, then maybe consider either moving positions or be daring enough to move careers.
That's really good advice. Do you have any go-to resources that you use to kind of continue this continuous learning cycle that you're on? Because you talk a lot about it, like reading and all of that. Do you have any specific resources or things that you recommend to people that maybe you've used over the years?
Yeah, for my, oh man, there's a few. So the first one is how full is your bucket? And maybe we can put it in the show notes because remembering everybody's the author's names, not really good at that part, but how full is your bucket is definitely one of them. The five dysfunctions of a team, I believe that's by Patrick Lencioni, but you please correct me if I'm wrong on that piece. Once again, John Maxwell's Five Levels of Leadership. That is a great book right there. I just got done finishing The Four Agreements. So that might be more on the hippie side of things, but I think it is important in really trying to develop who you are and having those agreements fester into your leadership style and how it is that you work. And next up, I'm doing Kobe Bryant's Mamba Mentality. That's going to be the next book that I read, and hoping to learn about his discipline in trying to obtain excellence. I think that that's a piece that's always intrigued me, and how
Yeah.
he's created this alter ego of, or he did create this alter ego of the Mamba mentality. I'm the Black Mamba. So that's probably what's next for me.
So good. Okay, I'll put as many of those as I can find links to in the show notes. So I'm wondering if we can do a couple of rapid fire questions. We do this kind of to wrap things up with every guest.
Let's do it.
All right. What lights you up and makes you feel sustainable?
Seeing the flicker of the light bulb.
Really? I've never heard someone say that. That's a really interesting response. I love that.
Yeah, they don't have to get it all the way, but if I can just see a flicker that they might be getting it, oh,
Yeah.
yeah, you just made my day because we're going to turn that light on, I promise.
Oh, that's so special. I love that. Do you, I mean, you've shared a lot of Maxwell books, but do you have a favorite quote or a recent book that you've read other than that one that has impacted you?
In the
Read.
Four Agreements,
Yeah.
there is a mention of the first agreement, which is just be unapologetically you. Be you. And I think that that like really made an impact. Like so much of what we've gone through in life is due to whatever norms was handed down to you. You weren't born with these norms. Your parents gave you norms. Your religion gave you norms. Your environment gave you norms. Society gave you norms. And you're operating based off of that. But is that truly you? So being the being you, being unapologetically you, yes, that's a big key that I'm working on.
That's great. What did you learn in 2024 that you brought forward into this year?
Oh God, what I learned in 2024, and I truly am a humble person, but what I have recognized, and it's actually one of the things that I was having a conversation and saying, I think I've outgrown this. I've outgrown people talking to me like I don't know what I'm doing. Like I am that guy. I am that good. Although I'm saying it right now in this moment on this podcast, I don't put it out there on my day to day, but I know this. In 2024, I know that I have had success in many different centers, and my model for success has it's proven at this point. So I don't have to doubt myself anymore. I don't have to lower myself to try to make someone else feel good. So I'm bringing that into 2025, that energy.
Yes. Share more of that with everybody. That's awesome. What are you hopeful for this year?
Oh, I'm hopeful for peace and calamity. I think that with the climate of the world, especially in the United States right now, there's a lot of uncertainty, but I have to remain hopeful that there'll be some calamity and some peace.
Yeah, I agree. We're recording this on April 3rd, 2025. So just for people for context, if they go back and listen. Yeah, I agree. It's I think we're all just those of us just need to figure out a way to, I don't know, loop arms and figure this out. And the ones who don't want to, well, you got to just leave them behind.
Gotta leave them behind.
You know, like I've always been like, don't leave anyone behind. It's in my framework of leadership. Leave nobody behind. And I just think that sometimes you have to also meet people where they are. And if they're not ready and it's not serving me, then I can't not move forward in a way that I think is for the better good. Because you're not seeing the vision. Like you have to sometimes just leave people behind. And if they decide, hey, now I'm ready to kind of jump on, great. Then you're welcome to always come. But we can't wait at the station for too long because shit's going to go down. So like either get on now or try to get on later, but the train's moving. So I agree with that. I think that it's going to be in the collective, I believe, really, truly, in a bunch of people just coming together and, I don't know, doing what we can to make everybody feel like we're not alone in this crazy world right now.
Yes. I was at a conference just recently, and the speaker, her name is Donna Hay, what a great speaker that she is. But she ended up closing with this. She said, with this environment that we have going on, you have to run. Mm-hmm. And if you can't run, you have to walk. And if you can't walk, you have to crawl. But the point is, you have to keep moving no matter what. So as you kind of said, people being left behind, if they have to be left behind, that's fine. But you just got to continue to keep moving, keep growing as a person. I thought it was so powerful.
Yeah. Here in Canada, we, you know, always find a way to throw some sort of hockey analogy into everything that we do that's inspirational. And so right now, I think with the climate of the world, we've got this whole like motto of elbows up, right? Because when you're playing hockey and you get to the boards in the corner and you got your elbows up. So I think a lot of us are not saying any words and you see someone and you do the nod and the elbow comes up and we're just like, yeah, that's our moving forward. The elbows are up. So yeah. Is there one final thought that you want to leave our listeners with today?
Oh man, my final thought is this. This was an absolute pleasure to be on this recording on this show. So I want to thank you for being such an excellent host and interviewer to be able to pull out questions and conversation the way you did. So for you to keep on going and keep on thriving, would love to invite you to our podcast, the My 5 Cents podcast, and you be a guest on the show there. Would love to see you in action on that show there. So yes, thank you so much for taking the time with me.
Yeah, you're welcome. And thank you. It would absolutely be an honor for me to be there if you thought it was a good fit. So let's keep in contact. I don't want to lose contact. I want to make sure that I follow you and support you and all the things you're doing. I say this to every guest because I truly believe it to be true. Is that I believe that our time and our energy are two of the greatest gifts we have to give. So I just thank you so much for giving me both of those today. You didn't have to come and show up. We just met each other before we hit record. And this has been, you know, such a pleasure to start my day off this way. So thank you.
Thank you. And thank you everyone for listening.
Yeah, you're welcome. So thank you again, everyone, for listening. If you've enjoyed this episode, please consider subscribing and leaving a review or leave a comment on what you enjoyed from that podcast episode. And if you have any suggestions for future episodes, I'd love to hear from you. Even better, please share it out with a friend or a colleague and turn on your notifications so that you never miss an episode. It really does help our podcast gain more listeners so that we can grow our Lead From Within community. Thanks again, everyone, and keep reaching for your highest branch. Thanks for tuning in to the Lead From Within podcast. For more information on leadership, employee engagement, and self-care, you can follow me on Instagram, Curis Consulting. Curis is spelt C-U-R-I-S, so that's Curis_consulting. Click on the Linktree link at the top of my bio for a free discovery call with me and to get some free downloads. You can also join the Lead From Within Facebook group, or you can visit my website at www.curisconsulting.ca. If you feel inspired to, go ahead and subscribe to the podcast and leave a comment. Your support is greatly appreciated. Thanks again for tuning in, and see you in the next episode.